The 30 Minutes to President's Club book on cold calling is live. Cold calling sucks, and that's why it works. Armand, what are the four reasons this will be the most actionable sales book in the world?
Number one, we broke down every part of a cold call step by step. Number two, you'll hear voiceovers embedded in QR codes that allow you to master the tone. Number three, we've taken examples from over 200 podcast guests, so no matter what you sell, you will be covered. And then lastly, number four, this is the first data-backed cold calling book because Gong backed the advice with data from over 300 million cold calls. So folks, you can get the audiobook, the digital book, the physical book, wherever you get your books. There will be a bunch of links to buy books wherever you need them in the show notes. Peace. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this episode of 30 Minutes to President's Club. My name is Armand Farouk, and I'm here with my co-host, Nick Sigelski. And today, we have one of the greatest guests we've ever seen of all time. He's a negotiation machine. He is a cheap bastard. He's bought a lot of software, and he's taught a lot of people how to negotiate deals. It is me. Yeah, folks, well, we had a guest cancel, admittedly. And so Nick and I decided to do a special mini playbook featuring yours truly on all things negotiation.
If you're watching on YouTube, you might see my empty wallet, and you don't want an empty wallet. You want a full wallet. And aside from your ability to prospect, run great discovery calls, run a great deal, negotiating is the biggest place that salespeople take their cash and throw it in the trash. We don't want you to do that. We want you to keep your hard-earned commission check. And so my good friend Armand is going to teach you how you should be presenting price, what you should do step by step to navigate a negotiation so that you don't go back and forth and back and forth and bleed a million different cuts and die, and how you can ultimately get your deal closed on a timeline that gets you paid and not maybe in a quarter. All right. Armand, welcome to the show. You might not be aware, but we do start every single episode with your top three actionable takeaways. So let's get your three.
Well, folks, I am a cheap bastard. So today I'm teaching you to negotiate. Number one, create a cost to everything in a negotiation. If you ask for a discount, I'm going to ask for a timeline. If you ask for more seats, I'm going to ask for a three-year deal. The reason for this is if I give you something for free, you're going to assume you can get another thing. And so every time you ask for something, I create a cost to it so I get something in return, and eventually you stop asking for things.
I'm worried you're going to ask me for something in return here, but what's number two?
Number two, fake walk when they're asking for too much. There's going to be a point at which even when you start asking for things in return, someone's going to ask you for a 70% discount. And you can't say, oh, you want a 70% discount? Can I have a 50-year deal in return? So you have to fake walk. So what I'll say is, Nick, if you ask me for a 70% discount, I'm going to say, Nick, I'm going to be completely honest. I might have screwed up here, but this probably means that we're not a fit and I didn't do a good enough job of selling the value of what we brought to the table. I know we're so far off that it probably doesn't even make sense for me to go back to my CFO and ask for anything. I just want to confirm that you're okay with that too, so that I'm not messing something up here. And what you do is you force them to take a step forward and say, no, I'm willing to work with you guys, or no, at least do your best. And that means that they don't actually need a 70% discount.
Today's deal acceleration cheat code is brought to you by Pipedrive, which is a CRM built by sellers for sellers. The best way to drive your pipeline forward is to every single day pull up a list of all of your open opportunities and look at each opportunity by stage and think, what can I do today that will increase my likelihood of winning this deal? That's how you keep your ops moving forward in between meetings that you have on the calendar. Now, we documented 5 cheat codes that can help you cut your sales cycle in half with Pipedrive. There's a link in the show notes to steal them.
Here's my secret to being a sales superhuman. It's auto reminders for everything. If I expect any reply from a prospect, I press Command H and Superhuman pops it right back into my inbox if I don't get a reply in 2 days. That means if you handle an objection, if you suggest times for a meeting, or if you ask for cuts back on red lines, always create a 2-day reminder task and assume they will not reply. So if you want to follow up on time every time, you can get a free month of Superhuman by checking it out in the show notes.
Very nice. What's number three?
Number three, negotiate like a grandma. So eventually, toward the end of a negotiation, let's say you've settled on a 10% discount, a 15% discount. What you want to do is you want to switch the negotiation bucket. When a grandma goes to the grocery store, she starts paying in $5 bills. And if she has a $30 grocery bill, she might only have $20 in cash. So then she starts pulling out change, and maybe she scrapes together another $5 in change. And then she gets to the last $5 and she goes, well, Nick, do you accept checks? And that's what you want to do with your negotiation, because eventually the cashier is just like, take the $5 for free. All right, just go on with your apples and let me take on the next customer. And so once someone has gotten enough ARR discount, the next thing you say is like, look, I don't know if I can do anything more here. Can I work with you on billing terms? Or if you're running out of billing terms, you might say like, maybe I can ask my finance team for net 45 instead of net 30, and they will start to realize that you are tapped out on discounts.
Great. So other than hunting in my couch cushions for loose change to take to my friendly neighborhood Erewhon, I am assuming there is some degree of prep that you're doing before you walk into a meeting with a customer where you're going to be delivering price, or you anticipate some degree of negotiation. Talk to me about what happens prior.
So the number one thing that you need to understand is, what is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement? So I used to sell equity management software at a company called Carta. And here's an example where I know I have really high leverage in a deal. Every 12 months, a startup needs to get a valuation on their stock options. If someone is at month 11, I know they pretty much have to buy something in a month. And if I know I'm vendor of choice, I know it's pretty likely that they're gonna buy something from me. So I probably am not gonna discount very much, especially if I know I'm the only competitor in the deal. Conversely, if they're at month 3, they don't need another valuation for 9 months. They're not issuing a bunch of stock options. And there are 4 other competitors who are coming in at half the price. I know I'm probably going to have to work with them on price, because I'm either going to lose the deal to a competitor or I'm going to lose the deal to the status quo.
Great. And so let's say you've gone through that exercise, right? You know where they're at in terms of how far away they are from needing to make a decision, how big that problem is. How is that actually informing what you do?
Yeah. The number one rep that I ever coached, her name is Morgan Mello. She would oftentimes bring me in for a negotiation and she would tell me, Armand, here are their alternatives. Here are the competitors in the deal. Are we vendor of choice? Do they need to do something? Do they need to do something now? And then she would say, I don't think you need to discount this deal, but I want you to just come in and be the bad guy so I can maintain goodwill with my champion. So I will often know where I can land or where I will need to land before a negotiation starts. That's number one, is your first form of intel is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. Your second form of intel that will tell you how much you need to negotiate is, do not look at their eyes or listen to what they're saying. Look at their feet. If you know this is a business priority, if you know Power's eyes are on the deal, if you know your champion and the executive want this thing, and now procurement's asking you for a discount, their feet are moving forward in the purchase, the procurement's mouth is moving and asking for a 30% discount, but I know it won't matter. So I'm making that decision before the negotiation. And then lastly, number 3 is, I have my BATNA, I have their feet, and then I have the intel that the champion is telling me. So if you did a good job of building relationship with your champion, you can oftentimes ask your champion. I will literally say before going into procurement, I'll be like, hey, you've seen deals blow up at the finish line with procurement. And oftentimes you know if they need to get their pound of flesh. When you've bought things in the past, what are they typically asking you for in that negotiation? And now I can get a sense of how much meat I might need to put on the bone or even pad my quote with, so that procurement feels like they got to win. So those are your 3 forms of intel, and that should tell you how much you think you need to discount before you get into the negotiation.
There's a period before the champion's on your side where, like, they might be negotiating with you, or maybe their boss might be negotiating with you. And I think the foundation here probably starts with, like, how you tee up and present price in the first place. And I know you're doing some really intentional things when you're first putting that number in front of the customer. And I'm not talking about like really early on in a discovery call where you might give them a wide range just so they know directionally where you're at. I'm talking when you put that proposal with the real price in front of them. Talk to me about how that should go.
So there are a couple of things that need to happen before you give the number. The first thing you need to do is you need to validate problem. In other words, the first slide that I'm giving when I'm giving pricing is always, these are the 4 problems that you said you wanted to solve, and then these are the 4 ways that we can solve it. Are we generally aligned that this is something that we would want? independent of price. If there are competitors in the deal, I will oftentimes say, hey, there are these three other people who you are evaluating. And so far, what you've told me is that we are the best fit for you all, independent of price.
How long do you actually spend going through that? Because I learned that from you, and I've been on calls where I felt like I spent way too much time building up the problem, building up the issues. I'm curious, if you think about a 30-minute proposal call meeting, how you allocate your time in that meeting.
This should not have been the first time you've done this. There might be new people in the room, or this might but just be a recap for power. At the end of the discovery call, you're oftentimes getting problem validation. At the end of the demo call, you're oftentimes getting solution validation. At the end of the big team demo, you're oftentimes getting, hey, we're vendor of choice. And then at the beginning of the proposal call, you're just recapping the three or four things that you've learned in the last call. And you're saying, hey, just confirming, are we all on the same page? Do we want to work together? Are we actually vendor of choice? Great. If you haven't gotten that at this point, then I would honestly ask yourself, are you really at the point where you need to be walking them through a full proposal? Because that means you're not even at problem agreement yet.
You get to the point when you give price. Talk to me about how that goes.
So the first thing that you need to validate is problem agreement and vendor of choice. The second thing that you need to validate is process agreement. And so the way that you validate process agreement is you say, let's just pretend. And you oftentimes do this again before the proposal call. So you oftentimes have a prep call with your champion talking about, okay, what do you need to ultimately make a purchasing decision? They'll say a proposal and you'll use let's just pretend language. And so you'll say, hey, Nick, I'm really excited that we seem like the vendor of choice. Let's just pretend that this conversation goes well. I want to make sure that we're meeting all of your go live timelines and that if we have a price that actually works for you guys, if the contract looks the way that you want it to look, that we actually have a way to move forward together and navigate all the other boxes that you need to check off in the organization. So you mentioned that the three things that need to happen next are we need to get executive approval, we need to get finance approval, and then we need to do legal and security. This is how long each of those things will take if this next conversation goes well. Does that look about right? And all you're doing on the proposal call is you're recapping that thing that you've already done before. So this should not be the first time you've discussed process. This should have happened earlier in your sales cycle. And so all you're saying is like, okay, assuming this goes well, here were the timelines, the high-level buckets that we discussed. Are we still all on the same page? You now have process alignment.
Now you need to give a number.
Not yet. A third thing. The last thing you need is you need pricing structure alignment. And so this is when you start to give the number. Is you start to explain everything else that is required to explain price. You explain price before you give the number. So I'm going to tell you things like, well, Nick, it's going to take us this long to implement, so there will be an implementation fee. We price based on the number of seats and the products that you want. Our contracts typically go for this long. I'm going to explain all of the mechanics around how our pricing works before I give you the number. And then I'm going to give you the number and shut up. After you give the price, do not speak a word. He or she who speaks first loses. So the way that actually sounds is I might say like, look, Nick, the way that we price is based on the number of seats that you ultimately buy and then based on the different products that you have. If I was at Pave, I would say, sounds like you want the total rewards platform and the compensation planner. And it sounds like you're currently at 1,000 employees and you're going to grow to 1,500 throughout the year. So we have you in the 1,000 to 1,500 bucket for the full suite platform. Do I have that right? You say yes. Awesome. So the full suite price for 1,500 employees is $100,000 per year.
Demandbase uncovers hidden deal killers with buyer intent data. One deal killer is when your champion's problem isn't a business problem. So drill from situation to problem to impact. When I sold compensation software, the situation was they were planning comp on 300 spreadsheets. The problem is that led to poor manager oversight. And the impact was that poor oversight led to compensation inequities. And that was a big business problem. Go get all six question frameworks to spot hidden deal killers from our friends at Demandbase. Link in the show notes.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes. Now, it's very rare that prospects say, great, sign me up, here's my Amex. Usually, A smart buyer is going to know that their first reaction should be a bit of pushback. And so when you get that negative reaction from the customer, you don't know if that's real or fake, but I think you still respond the same way. So let's say the customer hits you with, oh, wow, it's actually a bit higher than we expected. Or, you know, we've been looking at some other quotes that seems kind of high. Oh, what's your response when you get some pushback or resistance on pricing?
What most sellers do is they start to stammer, sweat, or the other person goes silent. And they start to jump in and say, but we can work on it. We really want you to be a customer. If someone is acting surprised about pricing, you need to act surprised in return. And so if you say, whoa, that was wild. Like, it was way more expensive than I thought it was going to be. I'm going to say like, oh, well, Nick, I feel like I might have messed something up here because, look, we're never the cheapest, but we're never totally out of the realm of possibility. And so this might have been on me because maybe I wasn't transparent around our pricing, or maybe I gave you the impression that we were a cheaper product. And so I'm putting it back on them. I want to understand, do you actually have a sense of how much this thing could cost? Or are you just asking me for a discount? You're going to give me one of two answers. You're going to say, well, I thought it was going to be cheaper. Or you're going to give me a real answer. And you're going to say, well, your three competitors cost this much, and honestly, you're 3x the cost. And based on if they give me just the BS, I want cheaper, versus the competitor answer, I can take it either which way.
Great. So they say, I want it cheaper. Like, I didn't think it was going to be this. And they're not going to say it that way. They're going to say, yeah, I didn't think this thing was going to be 80 grand a year. Gosh, there's no way we're going to get that approved.
Totally. So if they say, I never thought this was going to be 80 grand, the first thing you can do is you can use a Chris Voss label. And you can say like, okay, it sounds like we might not be bringing enough value to actually justify the price. Or it sounds like we're not even worth anything close to that 80 grand. Or it sounds like we're a million miles apart. Is it literally if we weren't to come in at 20K? Or I guess, what did you have in mind? And so I still didn't get a number from you. And so what I want to do is I'm pushing for the number that isn't 80K. Another form of language that I like to use, I'm going to say, well, I mean, Nick, it's sort of hard for me to know like how far off we are. There has to be a number between $0 and 80K that you did have in mind. I guess like what did you have in mind? Because I don't even know how far off we are. I need to get them to take a step forward, because otherwise I'm just negotiating against myself. Now, if they give me competitors, I might do something a little bit different. What I'm going to do is I'm going to push you away into the competitor. You might say your other competitors are charging 40K. I'm going to say, Nick, I know those competitors. Right? To my understanding, we were bringing things to the table that I knew you would value above and beyond what those folks brought. I guess if they're offering everything that you need at half the price, I know I'm not going to be able to meet them at half the price. I guess why wouldn't you go with someone like Sales Goon? And so I'm going to push them away to the competition so they start to push back into me. Either way, the next action that happens in both of these scenarios is they take a step forward.
I'm sure there's salespeople that hear that, and that's giving them acid reflux. The idea of saying, oh, you should go with a competitor instead of us. What would you say to those salespeople that are really afraid to push the customer in the direction of your biggest competitor?
So the first thing is the reason that we validated that we were vendor of choice first. The definition of vendor of choice means you are the vendor that they would like to purchase, which means that if everyone else was priced at $1 and you were priced at $1.01, then that means they will probably still go with you unless you are literally not worth a penny more of value. And so I'm not saying you should just tell them to go to the competitor, but the reason you push them into the $1 solution is what you're waiting for them to say is, look, I do want to go with you. I'm just not willing to pay double the price. And that naturally begs the question, okay, then it's just a matter of us figuring out what is the additional value that we're bringing above the competition. By pushing them into the rock bottom competitors that you know they don't want, they're going to push back into you. And now we say, okay, so then it's just a matter of figuring out how much more value we bring over 40K that will determine where we ultimately land.
If that value is not enough, you may need to move a bit on price. But we need to get back to exploring that gap between the second tier and you, the first tier, first, because you need some information to determine how you're going to move things around in order to get there.
And so from here, what happens is you get the prospect to say, no, 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 you're worth a little bit more than the competition. Or no, 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 I believe that you're bringing some value to the table. I just don't believe you're bringing 80 grand of value. Awesome. So now we just need to match price and value. But first, this is not the full ask. So once I get them to take a step forward, I want all of the steps forward. So Nick, you believe that 80K is too expensive. I'm telling you that 40K is obviously what we're not going to come down to. There's some amount between 40 and 80 that's going to be the right number. But the reality is, this probably isn't the only thing you're going to ask for me, because we're talking about an 80K purchase. I get to do all of this stuff in one cut with my CFO. So I need you to tell me, are you going to come and ask for things like billing terms? Are you going to come and ask for things like rate locks? Are you going to come and ask for things like access to all future products? Whatever the most common asks that you know they're going to ask for anyway, bring those up now. You want to get the full ask on the table. And the reason for that is, once you get the what else, what else, what else full ask, now you can use options to force trade-offs to get the final ask. So let's just pretend, Nick, that you say, well, look, I know our finance team is going to want 60. I'm going to run the same thing again. Net 60? You want net 60? I was like, geez, every customer I've ever sold, they want net 15. And I'm fighting you like a dog on every single thing you bring to the table, even if it doesn't matter to me. I'm fighting you like a dog. I want to stay in this fight for a solid 10 minutes. You give me another thing on the table, I'm going to do the fake walk that I mentioned up front. I'm going to say, shoot, Nick, is it even worth me bringing anything to my CFO? And they're going to say like, no, 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 look, I can work on all of these things, but the price is most important. Maybe I can concede on the billing terms. And so every single time you create a little bit of fight, you're getting them to come an inch forward. You want to start to create a cost to everything in negotiation. You want to start removing value in exchange for price. So every time they ask for something more, I'm going to ask for something in return. So you ask me for more seats, I'm going to say like, Nick, I need a 3-year deal. You start asking me for a 40% discount, I'm going to be like, Nick, I guess you don't really need the Total Rewards portal. Maybe we can remove that. So every time you ask for something, I'm making it really, really painful until I feel like I've tenderized you, tenderized the meat of the negotiation enough that I know if I give you a couple of options, you're so worn out from the negotiation that you're going to pick one of the options because you know you're not going to get much more out of me.
What you're doing that was small, you mentioned, but I think it's worth repeating, is you are saying, hey, I'm going to have to go back to my CFO and get this approved. And I only get one cut with them. And what you're doing here is you're actually removing yourself, Armand, from being the person in control and power in the negotiation. And that's actually something Chris Voss talks about also, where he's like, hey, you don't want them to know that you might be in control. You're saying, I got to go to my CFO. I got to go to my executive team. And what this allows you to do then is ask, 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 get all of their asks on the table. You're doing some negotiation discovery.
Your ZoomInfo actionable insight tactic is called Jane's Moving Up. Why? Because that's the email subject line you'll use when you get a real-time notice that your prospect Jane just got promoted. From there, in the email, explain how ZoomInfo helps rising sales leaders win their first 90 days on the job by highlighting coaching opportunities or supporting a team-wide prospecting push. And you can try out this trigger-based email template for prospect promotion and 4 other scenarios inspired by ZoomInfo's go-to-market plays. Link in the show notes. Today's tactic to triple your connect rate is brought to you by Rocket Reach, who provides data that lets you reach out to the right person at the right account at the right time. Every time you're reaching out to an account, pull down the contacts again. Yes, I know it sucks, but the average tech tenure is 2 years, which means 50% of the workforce turns over every year. So look up the account, pull anyone who was hired, and scratch anyone who was left. And one way you can pull verified and accurate data is with Rocket Reach. So if you like this, check out their toolkit on 8 ways to triple your cold call connects in the show notes.
So let's fast forward a bit here, Armand, and assume you've gotten all of their asks and requirements out on the table, and you've come to a place where what they are asking for, you're like, in your mind, I know we can do that. Now you're telling them you got to go back to your CFO, but you know from your perspective, that deal can get done. Customer feels good. Everything's out there. Talk to me about what you explain and talk through with a customer now.
So now that I've tenderized you enough in this negotiation, we are reaching the 75% mark of the horror movie, where the hero finally starts to escape and they can see the light of survival. And so what I want to do is I want to now confirm the price first. So this can go one of two ways. They can either give me a number that I know I'm willing to accept, or they could still be really far off. Let's start with the first scenario because it's much easier. Let's say I was at that 80K deal and they're like, you know, if you could get it to us for 70K, I think we could make this happen. I'm thinking economic downturn, 70K from 80K, pretty good deal. But I'm not just going to say, sure. I will always give them what they want in exchange for something that I want in return. So now what I'm going to do is like, look, I think we can make something work. And now I'm going to double lock down my deal. Hey, if I go to my finance team, the first thing they're going to ask me, is this going to close by the end of the month? We mentioned this plan that we had earlier. Can you get this done? They say, yes. Awesome. I'm not telling you I can get this done, but I will tell you that if this thing slips past that and they do acknowledge that we can get this deal done, that deal is going to be taken off the table. So I need your word. They'll say, yes. Awesome. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to force some trade-offs in the other things they brought to the table. I'm going to try for those billing terms. I'm going to try for the one-year deal, but I can't promise those are going to get done. It sounds like the 70K price is really the most important thing for you, right? They'll be like, yeah, don't worry. If you can get that, we can concede on the other things. And now what this allows me to do is it allows me to come back with the 70K price. And I might even give them the other things too. So they feel like the freaking jackpot winners. It feels like they won the lottery. That's what happens when they get you to a number that you want. Don't just grab it right away. You got to act the part. Accept the deal very, very slowly. Now, let's pretend that they gave me the number, and no matter how much I fought them up, they came up from 40 to 50K. And this happens a lot with a savvy negotiator. Let's say that I know my floor is 60K. What I'm going to do is I'll always say, look, Nick, we've got some other things on the table, and I'm not going to lie, we're going to have to work on some of those other terms that you talked about, but I think I can get a six in front of this number. Is that going to be a non-starter? Because I can fight like a dog with my CFO to get that. But it sounds like you only want to sign a deal if it's going to be 50K. And almost always, if I'm in striking distance, and they'll be like, depends on some of the other terms in the deal. And that's when I know I've got them. And so now I can start to introduce those other terms on the table and basically run that same play that I was running earlier, where I can say like, okay, after I get your reaction on that, here's what I'm going to shoot for. I'm going to shoot with a six in front of it, but I'm really going to try to get you those net 60 billing terms. I'm just going to tell you now, it's probably going to have to be a two-year deal. I'm going to try to not get it to be a three-year deal. Before I go back to my CFO, I need to know if that gets it done. Nick, like, if I can go get that deal, is it going to get it done for you? Because I'm going to be honest, I can't even go back and make the ask.
They say, yes, you go back. You meet with the customer again. How are you presenting options to them? Are you scheduling a meeting? And then when you get on that meeting, what are you sharing with them?
If I've done this right, what happens is I shouldn't have to give them options. I can just say, awesome, these are the three things that were important to you, and this is what we can provide. Does this work for you? Great. Sometimes that doesn't happen. At which point, sometimes I will literally have backup options, or if I get the sense that it wasn't going to be the last cut, I will come ready with options.
They give you a, yep, that sounds good. You're at a place where now you're going to go back to your CFO. How are you coming back to the customer then with the options or your counter proposal?
I'm always going to act like I'm going to bring back bad news. Let's say we're negotiating on a Tuesday and it's the end of the month. I'm going to pre-schedule a meeting with them tomorrow. I'm going to say by the end of the day, I'm going to work with my CFO and I'm going to try to get you an answer. My guess is we're going to have to review some of these options live because I don't know if I'm going to get everything that you want. And so we should just be ready to have this conversation together. If I know I've got the deal in the bag, I will still not tell them that I know I've got the deal in the bag. I will tell them, hey, I got to go meet with my CFO. I'll send you an email by end of day. Worst case scenario, let's use this meeting as a backstop. The moment I get off that call, look, we're in sales. We know what deals we can get done. I'm drafting an email that says, hey, here's the terms that we can get. I know you asked for this, 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 and this, right? I'm glad to tell you that this has been fully approved by finance. I've included my CFO on CC, or I would literally include Matt, my CEO, on CC. I would draft up that email, and then I would time it for 4 hours later in the day. And the reason for that is I did not want them to think that I was getting approval right away. I wanted them to think that I was working for approval, and I want them to see that my CEO is on the thread, and Matt would always reply saying, hey, my only ask would be that you keep this confidential because we love all of our customers the same, but we look forward to calling you a customer soon. You have to put on the act. I'm sorry, procurement's doing it too. That's step number one. Step number two is if you don't know you have the deal in the bag, then you might need to jump on that next negotiation call, right? So you jump on that second call, and in that case, that's where you start to use options. So at that point, on the next call the next day, you say, hey, my CFO raked me over coals. I know these were the three things that were important to you. And look, I think we've got something really, really good. And the reality is we can't give you everything because this would just be massively inequitable to multiple owners. And if word got out, we would be seeding bad seeds in the market. And so I have two options for you based on what's most important to you. And oftentimes what I'll do, for example, is I'll present a one-year deal at a higher price and a two-year deal at a lower price. Essentially, what I'm doing is I'm just forcing them to make a trade-off based on what's most important to them. They're going to be like, all right, you gave me my 20% discount. No, I want it to be 25. But when I give you two different options, now I've created a cost to you getting a bigger discount, and it's your choice if you would like to pick the two-year deal as your cost to get that discount. That would usually get the deal done in one cut.
So the example you gave in terms of the options and the trade-off, you used deal term and price. Are there other common related levers?
Feature mix and price. So when I was at Carta, oftentimes customers would know that they were going to graduate into some enterprise level accounting features that they didn't need today. And so I would sell them on that full vision. But then if they asked for a discount, I would say, you can downgrade, but that's only going to get you a $500 discount. Do you really want to like lose all of that future potential, all of those other features that you would normally pay $3,000 for? That's one example. Another great example is with seats. Someone will want to price in growth. I can give them an option that says, hey, you can either agree to more seats now, and I'm going to give you a discount on those seats, but that means your price is higher today, which is how I get paid, or you can buy fewer seats at a higher price per seat. Either way, wherever you land on the board, I win. You either get in at a lower number and a higher price per seat, which means I can upsell you later, or I get more seats right now, and then I don't have to come back and try to sell you those more seats later on. So either way, I'm setting up the board such that I'm the winner in the negotiation.
Great. So to recap, if you leave that big negotiation call with they have terms that you know you can do where you've almost pre-agreed, you are just giving one option, saying what you asked for is what you are getting. If you're in a place where it's not 100% certain, that is when you are going to options. Follow-up question on options. How many will you present? Is it two? Is it three? Are you giving four? Are you giving them 137 different options they can take?
When I first started selling insurance, I'll never forget, I brought 20 proposals to my first customer call. And the prospect's head was spinning. I don't think most sellers do that, but I do believe that there's value in simplicity and reducing indecision. And so remove options from the table, bring two. Multi-year deal, single deal. You basically want to pick price and then the second most important variable to them and force a single trade-off. Don't force 20 different trade-offs.
Great. You are at agreement on deal terms. Is there anything else you're doing here to make sure that you don't drop the deal at the finish line?
Great. This has been fully approved. This is what we agreed upon. Big red letters. This is the due date of that agreement. And then this is what happens if we don't make that agreement, which was already discussed. Once that is done, we're getting on our call together. And this is the beauty of having that pre-scheduled call. And we're jumping right into our process. We're setting micro deadlines for when they're going to get me first cuts back on their red lines. And I'm chopping up this deal like I would managing any other vendor review cycle. But I'm going to start on the contract date and I'm going to work my way backwards. I'm going to start with the contract being signed in the next 3 weeks. And I'm going to say, okay, these are the two things that need to be done. Legal needs to be done and security needs to be done. And I'm going to chop up each of those work streams into micro deadlines. The first thing that happens in legal is you need to get first cuts back. And so I'll usually say, hey, you have 4 days to get me first cuts back. From there, I'm going to return cuts to you in 1 day. Once I get you cuts back, you've got another 2 days to get them back to me. And you know why? That's because we have a pre-scheduled legal-to-legal call on day 7 for any final cuts that happen. That's going on your legal person's calendar today. And the reason that that is important is the hardest part of getting legal done is getting legal to start on your paper at all. This entire process is called putting someone on a red line deadline. Deadlines for first cuts, cuts back, and the legal to legal call. Those are the three major cuts that I'll typically run in a legal process. Now, again, I've sold bigger deals to companies like DoorDash or Shopify and whatnot. Those legal processes will take 2 or 3 months. You just have more longer red line deadlines, but it doesn't mean you don't have them.
This has been phenomenal, and I know you are going to help save me some money on some deal negotiation here, but we're running out of time. We got to move to the final question. So my final question is, what is one bad habit that you see a lot of salespeople exhibiting that you think they need to break because it hurts far more than it helps?
No unilateral concessions in negotiation. The other day I was selling an investment property and I tried to negotiate my realtor down on price. And so he said, Armand, totally fine. We can drop our sale commission to 2% from 3%. The only thing is all we have to do is just not take pictures that are nice. Are you good with that? And I go, well, no, doesn't that mean that it's not going to look as nice and it's not going to sell for as much? Like, totally. But that's also why we charge a full 3% and we're not the discount brokers, is we're going to spend more on your photos. So do you want us to discount the photos or do you want us to discount our commission? I paid the full 3%. Create a cost to everything in negotiation.
All right, Armand, this has been a wonderful one. Everybody stick around for a 60-second recap coming up soon.
All righty, Nick, it is time for a 2x2 recap.
Number one, when they ask you for a discount or when they give you resistance on the initial price that you shared, you cannot react like that was normal. If you walked in to a Tom Ford suit store and thought, oh gosh, I thought these suits were going to be $60, the salesperson would look at you like you're a freak because there's an expectation that that is a premium brand. And so if they try to rattle you with some pushback on your price, you need to act a little bit surprised and thrown off, not like it is normal. My second one is when you're actually getting into the negotiating and they are putting different asks on the table, they're giving you the full ask. Each time they ask for something and you're talking about it, you need to make it painful. If the customer asks for billing terms and you're like, yeah, we can accommodate that, what you're doing is teaching them that every time they ask and put their wrist out, they receive. We can't do that. We need to show when they put their wrist out, it's going to get grabbed and squeezed and maybe slapped in order to get what they want. You cannot make it easy for them. Otherwise, they're just going to keep asking.
Number three. Act like you're doing the impossible. Whenever you turn your back to get finance approval or CEO approval, make it seem like there's a slim chance that it's going to get done. Jump off that call. You write up that email explaining that the deal has been approved. You CC your CEO or your CFO on it, and you reaffirm that deal expires at this time under these conditions. And you send that email 4 hours after the negotiation call. Do not send it right away. And then lastly, number four, if you have to go to a two-part negotiation, finish the negotiation using options. Force them to make a final trade-off between a single-year deal and a multi-year deal, or between a bigger feature package and a smaller feature package. By forcing them to do a trade-off, again, you create a cost negotiation and you finish the negotiation in a second cut. Alrighty, Nick. How can people help us out here?
So Armand, when I was first learning this very structured negotiation process, it was very helpful for me to see it written out step by step so that I could adapt the way that I negotiated in my sale to it. And folks, if you listened to this episode, you heard the tenor and the tone and the pacing of the words when Armand was negotiating and a lot of the why behind this stuff. But if you actually want to see this negotiation process written out in written form, we published it in the 30 Minutes to President's Club newsletter a couple weeks ago. And so there's a link in the show notes. You can get it now. It's free. It's meant to help you all. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on the show.
Demandbase uncovers hidden deal killers with buyer intent data. One deal killer is when your champion's problem isn't a business problem. So drill from situation to problem to impact. When I sold compensation software, the situation was they were planning comp on 300 spreadsheets. The problem is that led to poor manager oversight. And the impact was that poor oversight led to compensation inequities. And that was a big business problem. Go get all six question frameworks to spot hidden deal killers from our friends at Demandbase. Link in the show notes.
Today's show is brought to you by Exactly Forecasting, which is a flexible sales forecasting solution that uses AI and data to help you call an accurate sales forecast. Gartner says over half of sales leaders don't have high confidence in their forecast. One way we recommend to improve your forecast is to align as a team on explicit attributes that must be true in order to deem a deal forecastable. That way your forecast will get clearer and the team will know where to focus efforts. We put together a forecasting 101 guide with our friends at Exactly. Get it for free in the show notes.